good morning, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are in the world. I am delighted today to bring to you a joint venture between Pathcon Labs and H3 Healthcare Consulting. We have Dr. David Krause here today, and we have Brian Shelton. And we're going to dive into the purity of our water. Water is the elixir of life. It's what we need. But what do we really know about what is in our water? There's been lots of different cases that have evolved over the years, and we'll get into that. This will be a series of discussions on an interview format that we will bring to you. So today, I'm delighted to welcome Brian and David, and we'll just go right into letting them tell us a little bit about their background, what they do, and we're going to get right into talking about waterborne pathogens and what it really means to us in health, what it means to us from a government understanding, and how it impacts our life in everyday living. So, David, Brian, welcome, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Thank you, Jock.
Oh, good. Good to be here.
Doing well.
Excellent. Well, now, guys, we're going to dive straight in here. I want to hear a little bit, the people out there are going to want to hear a little bit about both of you. So, David, we'll go with you first from Healthcare Consulting. Tell everybody about your background, what you do, what you specialize in, then we'll move over to Brian.
Okay. Again, my name is David Krause. I'm from Florida and have operated mostly in Florida for my professional career, formerly with the Florida Department of Health as an industrial hygienist and state toxicologist, and have been currently running a company called HC3, Healthcare Consulting and Contracting. And one of our main areas of interest and focus for our clients is in evaluating waterborne pathogens and other waterborne contaminants that we deal with in both the workplace and industry, healthcare, as well as residential settings.
Excellent. Thank you, David. I'm Brian from Pathcon Labs. Give us a little bit about you and your company and what you specialize in.
So I'm Brian Shelton. My background is in microbiology and epidemiology. I got an MPH from Emory University, and I own a laboratory called Pathcon Labs. The incorporated name is Pathogen Control Associates. So we have a lab in North America, and we have a lab in Europe. And so we really do samples from all over the world. And most of our business is associated with water. We also do indoor air. And in water particularly, there's a bacteria that causes Legionnaire's disease. You get it from inhaling little droplets in contaminated water. And we specialize in finding that hopefully before it turns into a problem, catching it early. And so that's what we do.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. And that's a really nice segue into this discussion because, let's face it, gentlemen, there has been outbreaks over the years. Some have been well known in the national news. And internationally as well, we've had outbreaks in Europe. I'm sure you guys have been involved in all of these outbreaks over the time. So let's talk about the trends and the risks of our water sources here globally, but in particular, what's happening here in the US and Canada. So let's talk about a little bit of these emerging risks. David.
Absolutely. The risks of Legionnaire's disease and other waterborne pathogens has been rising throughout the United States, as well as the I'll say industrialized world. In many ways, these waterborne pathogens, they're bacteria predominantly. They're a first world problem. They come with potable water. They come with drinking water. They come with air conditioning type systems, mechanical systems, industry, recreational water sources, of that nature. We only learned of Legionnaire's disease and Legionella in 1976. And it was early 1977 when it was really recognized what bacterium caused it. Unlike other bacteriums that, such as cholera that we've known about for centuries, this is a relatively new discovery in science overall. But a lot has been learned over the past few decades, and it is actually one of the few diseases that's called a nationally notifiable condition or nationally notifiable disease. So we have, I'll say, better records than most on the trends, and those trends have been skyrocketing over the past 15 years. Certainly since 2002, we've had a massive increase in recorded Legionnaires' disease cases, and those trends have been going exponentially, you could say, at least 650% since 2000. And we're seeing more outbreaks, we're seeing more cases, and unfortunately, this is one that doesn't just give you diarrhea, this is one that actually causes fatalities. Many of these diseases cause hospitalization, intensive care treatment, as well as fatalities in both healthcare and community-acquired settings.
David, we'll jump into later on the different pathogens in the water, but I want to take you back into where you're talking about these trends, and you mentioned that it's increasing, and the prevalence is increasing throughout the board. What do you feel is the causation for this increase in all of these cases over the last, say, in the last 10 years?
Well, you could say that's the $500 million question. I don't think there's a clear answer to that. It's most likely numerous contributing factors, changes to our water systems, changes to our water sources, whether or not water systems are properly disinfected or treated. Of course, we have an increased population of people who are more susceptible to Legionnaires' disease and other respiratory diseases related to water. So it's probably multifactorial. However, I think there's some sentinel events and some regulations that have certainly made the problem more acute and problematic here in the United States. As well as an aging infrastructure. As both our population gets older, our buildings, our water systems are becoming older, and they become more susceptible more susceptible to growth, but also give a better home for these bacterium to grow.
Thank you for that. Now, Brian, just over to you. I want to come to you now as well. Let's talk a little bit about the trends that you've seen, because obviously, David and his team seeing it on the ground, but you're the person who's identifying these in your laboratory. Is there any particular trend that you're seeing that kind of has changed over the years?
Yeah, I think probably the most striking trend we've seen, since I've been involved with PathCon, and that goes back to 1989, is during COVID. The change that COVID had on, society, cities really not functioning right, people staying home, hotels empty, buildings empty, people working from home. The whole water systems, municipal water systems aren't operating as designed. The water flow is much less, was much less during those times, resulting in stagnation in, municipal waters, resulting in stagnation in buildings, office buildings, hotels. And we've just seen, a big spike in both Legionella in the water samples we're getting, and we're seeing a big spike, in a number of cases. I would say, the single most important factor that we've seen affecting numbers was COVID, indirectly, the result of COVID.
Well, Brian, I think another aspect that COVID impacted both our infrastructure, our buildings, the pathogens, but also the agencies that are tasked with gathering this information, reporting the data, investigating outbreaks, or initially investigating those cases of disease within the United States is predominantly local county health departments, state health departments, as well as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC. During COVID, they were frankly overwhelmed to the point they're broken. And so what we're seeing in reported cases, I'd say from even 2019 forward, because their efforts and their resources were tasked and pulled elsewhere, I think we're probably seeing lower reporting levels and less ability to go out and perform these investigations. And so that's another aspect I think we need to consider.
David, well, you know, like during COVID.
Sorry, go ahead, Brian.
During COVID, for example, you know, if somebody, you know, was sick, you know, they might not be testing necessarily for Legionella because they'd be only thinking, you know, COVID, which, you know, so there could have been a lot of cases of Legionnaires' disease that didn't go and get tested, you know, and then confirmed. I'm not sure, but you know, it's possible. So
absolutely,
everything points to like an underreporting, you know, of Legionnaires' disease. And as you say, you know, it's skyrocketing. You know, it's one of the few organisms that's, you know, increasing in the disease it's causing, as opposed to being controlled. You know, and this is kind of like a, you know, a stain on, you know, public health policy, you know, where this is happening. You know, this should be given a higher priority and a whole revisit to prevention policies, that, you know, to actually bring this disease under control. And it's a preventable disease.
It is.
So guys, let me throw it out to you, and anyone you can answer this, because I was going to jump in. You've touched on a subject here that's probably really potent, and it could also be quite worrying, because public health and the agencies that are supposed to be dealing with this, let's bring it right out. What are they failing? How are they failing? Why are they failing? And how important really is their failures to not only corporations, organizations in the health industry, or even to the general public? Where are our organizations or other agencies or government like CDC that you guys have been dealing with? What is happening? Why are they failing?
Well, Brian, you've been dealing with this for, I'll say, a few more decades than myself. What are your observations?
Yeah, well, you know, going back decades, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, we were encouraging CDC to, you know, change their policy. And their policy was really one of discouraging testing. So it wasn't just we have no policy. It was don't sample, you know, for a variety of reasons. And that caused a lot of problems, because for the building owner, if they don't sample, how are they going to control Legionella? First of all, you know, they're trying to control it in pipes, which they have no access to the pipes. You know, they can't get in, you know, these pipes that are under the floor or behind the wall and, you know, scrub the interior of these pipes. You can't get to them. You can't see the organism growing in it when the water comes out of the pipe because the organisms are too small. So you basically, if you follow the no testing, you're just hoping and praying that your water treatment, whatever chlorine or whatever you run through there or whatever is provided by the municipality, is working. And the only way you find out it's not working is if you have now some occupants of the building coming down with disease. And so we were trying to encourage CDC to look at a bigger picture rather than waiting for two cases. And that was their response. You know, they would get involved if a building had two cases. But our feeling was, if you wait for a building to have two cases and then start doing something, that's two cases too late. You know, yet they don't even respond if it's like one case, doesn't meet the definition of an outbreak. So, you know, we were encouraging them to think about testing so that people could find, you know, the organism before anyone got sick. You know, and testing is the very thing you do when there's an outbreak. You know, there's an outbreak, you come in and you test and you find the source that's, you know, positive, and you correct it, you know, and you disinfect it, and then you retest again, you know, to make sure it was corrected properly. And then you can even follow up testing to make sure it's not coming back. And then that way you can prevent the disease. And in an outbreak setting, what are we doing? We're preventing the next case of the outbreak. So this is a proven strategy, because we, on all the outbreaks where you come in and prevent, it works. You can prevent the next case. And you don't have to apply it after 5 cases or 10 cases. You can apply the same prevention technique to before the first case even happens. So, you know, we had this debate with CDC and we were encouraging them. And I think basically, you know, we're still here, and now testing is, you know, done and encouraged by public health agencies around the world. So I think we did okay on that debate.
Yeah. You know, for having been in the seat of public health, in two different positions in my job, in my earlier career, I can say from that point of view, we're really looking at lack of resources, lack of priority, lack of training. You know, you only have so many people who are working any given day, or in the state of Florida, they can even be hired. They limit the number of employees based upon the population of the state. And then, of course, they pay them next to nothing. So, you know, I saw Legionnaire's disease and several other diseases go from having one person whose entire job was to monitor that one disease and look at it at all the counties and review all the records and try to determine if there were linkages between the cases. It went from that state back in 94, 95 to one person involved and responsible for tracking a half dozen diseases. And so they have less time to contribute and to devote to any particular one. They may be looking at arsenic in water, they may be looking at lead in water, they may be looking at Legionella in water, and then they have zero budget. I mean, they've been pinched so tightly on their budget. They don't go out and do investigations. They don't do training. The information they came in the door with is pretty much what they have to operate with. And one of the most frustrating things for me is in 2009, when I was working with the Department of Health, I was the co-author on the guidelines for investigating Legionnaire's disease in Florida. Based upon the information we had at the time, based upon the standards of care, the requirements for monitoring, how you would interpret samples, that document was, you know, I'll say perfectly fine in 2009. By 2014, we were encouraging them to update the document. It had been 5 years. By that time I had left the Department of Health, and by that time, literally the only thing they did to update that document was change the date. My name is still on that document. Wow. And if you go on the Florida website right now, you will still find the same document. So it's not from 2014. It's not just 10 years old. Okay, it's 15 years old. And so much has changed in 15 years. 2009 is before we started having this massive increase in cases, which really, if you look at the charts, started in 2012. So, you know, 2003, but then we had another inflection point, an increase in 2012. So, I mean, what we're dealing with now is so different. They don't keep up with their own guidance. They don't look forward, and they're trying to often apply the most rudimentary, get it off my desk, close the case effort, because they just don't have the time or resources to deal with it. So I think those are big factors in barriers to preventing Legionnaire's disease and other waterborne pathogens. Legionnaire's disease is only the number three in the big three microbes that are causing waterborne disease for Americans.
David, let me ask you something here, because there's a clear disconnection also between the public understanding and also from the government level. So I want to kind of go into that, because they haven't changed the document in so long. Obviously, you guys have seen so many changes. The whole strategy never has changed. Let's talk a little bit about Legionella and the fact that the public don't really know how dangerous this is, the path of infection, and how easy it is to colonize, and give us some examples. And maybe the fact that we can educate the public more would put more pressure on people that dealt, you know, like the CDC and everything else. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's go down to the public level.
Well, I think a good place to start is, where does it come from and how does it get there? Yeah. If you speak to most public health officials, they'll tell you that Legionnaire's disease is a building water system problem, period. Mm. Well, it doesn't show up there by magic. There are not Legionella fairies that sprinkle it in the water heaters. It comes there from the municipal water systems at low, probably not risky levels, but we frequently find it at measurable levels in the municipal water system. And then once it gets inside of a building, it finds ideal conditions. Once it begins to grow, and this is where Brian can really talk about the conditions and how quickly that can happen. Mm-hmm. Once it begins to grow, it poses a health risk. And then it's simply... this isn't a disease that if you drink it, it causes a problem. You simply have to breathe the fine mist and particles that come out. And that happens with every time you run a sink, take a shower, spray a water hose, and dozens of other actions that you would never even think about, it because those aerosols are usually too small for you to even see. So they're everyday activities that we do, and it just by chance, if you happen to be there and you're susceptible to contracting the disease, that's how people eventually contract it, is by breathing the organism in.
Before we go into asking Brian about how that colonizes, Brian, the dangers of that colonization, how it survives, David, I want you to give me, you've mentioned we breathe it in. So as you tell me that, the first thing that I'm thinking about is, wow, what I've stood and got photographed by water fountains, right? And various other water features. How dangerous then is this? Give me some more examples of how we breathe this in.
Well, the opportunity of exposure is ubiquitous and every day. The biggest differentiator to me is whether or not you're growing Legionella in that hot tub or that water fountain, or that cooling tower, or that pressure washer, or that street sweeper, or that, any number of fixtures and water sources and aerosols. There have been a handful of studies that have attempted to do a population-wide survey to figure out how frequently are these systems colonized and contaminated. And, you know, those have been, I would say, agonizingly too small and have not taken a look at, broad sector of the United States and other parts of the country. But in those few studies where they do look at it, 60-70% of the water systems they examine contains Legionella. So we think that it's not a necessarily a rare event, but there are rare conditions and events that then allow that organism to then become virulent, infectious, and lethal. So Brian, a lot of research still needs to be done.
Brian, let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk a little bit about how this organism survives, thrives, and this is your expertise. So, you know, give us the down low on that.
Well, there's a lot we don't know. But we do know that it comes into these, you know, man-made systems like jacuzzis or decorative fountains or potable water systems, cooling towers, you know, originally from water coming to the building from the municipality, which gets its water from, you know, rivers, lakes, streams, wells, groundwater, you know, whatever, a whole variety of sources. In some cases, you know, even, you know, desalination in some parts of the world. And that water then will have Legionella in it, typically at very low levels, because this organism is naturally occurring in the environment. You find it in rivers, lakes, and streams, but normally at low levels, you know, not enough really to be, you know, cause exposures to large numbers of people and cause outbreaks, you know, in a cluster. So when that water then finally makes it into a building, and that, you know, building water system then fills up a, you know, a decorative fountain or a jacuzzi, that water then circulates in that system. It's, the Legionella likes warmer water. So typically, you know, a jacuzzi is, I'm not sure what they keep the temperatures at, but it's warm and it likes that. And it's recirculated. So over time, that one or a few organisms that came in from the municipality now can start to grow. And, you know, if you ever feel sometimes the surface of something that's been underwater a long time, it can be sometimes very slimy. Well, that's a biofilm. Mm. And so the Legionella can grow, start growing on these surfaces. And if you think about a jacuzzi as an example, you know, it's not just the kind of the tub you're sitting in, but think of all the pipes, you know, that are going from the pump, you know, to the filter, you know, taking the water to then the jacuzzi, then recirculating it back. So, you know, when you clean something like that, you can really only physically clean what you have access to, and that's, you know, the inner tub. But you don't have access to inside of pumps and inside of pipes and inside of filters to clean. And all those are also potential sources. And we're relying on something to clean them, like a chlorine or a bromine. And that doesn't really, you know, get rid of that slime. You know, it only basically kills the organisms on the outer surface of that slime. And it can even then slough off some of that slime to release more organisms. So, you know, the only really way to know that you've killed something completely is to put it in an autoclave. You know, and we can't do that. It's not practical. So, you know, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here, but then the way to handle this, you know, is to design a good water treatment program, you know, where you're periodically cleaning and disinfecting, you know, with your chemicals, et cetera, and combine that with a test to let you know if it's working. And if it is working, you know, great, you know, keep it up. And if it's not, you know, you have to make some changes. And that could be increasing, you know, concentrations of your biocide you're putting in, or what have you. But you know you need to do something. But the only way you'll know, again, is with that test. So my whole, you know, shtick is the test is a vital component to any prevention program.
Let's talk about the fallout, Brian. Because I think this is a great segue and something that we have to do in another discussion more in depth, but organizations that don't test, right, that have, and then find they have an outbreak, but they don't continue with that testing, there's obviously going to be some legal implications and some problems that are associated. So let's talk a little bit, you know, why they should be testing and the fallout if they don't test.
Is that to me? That question to
yes.
me? So why yes, they should test and the fallout if they don't? Well, basically, they should test to get the knowledge if their water treatment program is working. Because if they don't test, you're only guessing if your water treatment's program. And many people, you know, facility managers, engineers, are responsible for the safety of the building occupants. And they cannot you know, be in a position where they're just guessing if their treatment is working. They need to know, you know, to have a good water treatment. And so, so the importance of testing is to know and be able to provide a safe environment by making changes. Think of testing as giving you the information, hopefully ahead of time before any disease, to know if your treatment's working. If it's not working, then you have the ability to change it before someone gets sick, right? If you are of the opinion, you know, and this used to be when we first started the company more in the 80s, now there's a more responsible kind of management than used to be. Before it was, oh, if we test, we could find it and we don't want to know. But that leaves you open to an outbreak. You know, it might feel nice not to know and to trick yourself and hope that everything is working right. But then when you have an outbreak, you know, now you have a serious problem because you may have two or three cases. One may be dead. You know, this is a serious, serious thing. And what was part two?
And Brian, from the public health side of things, outbreaks become huge events. They are public knowledge. It is the, you know, the local or national news stations standing out on the front steps. You know, we've been both involved in some of the largest outbreaks in the past 5 years in the United States. And they're, while they did receive some publicity locally, in Georgia, the largest one, it was approaching 90 cases, or at least the health department claimed that, and at least one fatality. In North Carolina, they had an outbreak at a state fairground.
I remember that, David, because I'm here. That's where I'm from. So that was a worrying case, and that spread out through the public information like that.
Yeah, they literally used the internet to do surveys of people to figure out how many people were affected. I think their estimates are in excess of 140 people. And numerous fatalities. Flint, Michigan, while the lead in the water was the big news and the impact that it had to children in the community was horrendous and a great tragedy, nobody died from lead. 12 people died from Legionnaires' disease over that 2-year-long outbreak. It impacted numerous hospitals and nursing home facilities in the community in general. So this can impact poor water quality and the system failures. They aren't just a building or a single facility. They are linked to the infrastructure that supplies them. And just maybe it's by bad luck. Maybe it's by just the declarations. But, you know, outbreaks prompt action. Outbreaks prompt litigation. And at least since 2000, the rate of, you know, when you have a case of disease, of Legionnaires' disease, and that resulting in some type of claim, lawsuit, litigation, is almost commonplace now. I rarely see cases where we have an outbreak and we don't have lawsuits. And, you know, when this results in fatalities, these are multi-million dollar lawsuits. And rewards. So, you know, that's not good for anyone. It's not good for the reputation of the facility. Mm-hmm. It's not good for public health. And in many ways, it's just like a wildfire. You know, it flashes up, and when it goes away, people go back to their normal business. But when we recognize that the conditions that allow Legionnaires' disease to occur and Legionella to grow in a building's water system also result in non-tuberculosis mycobacteria, Pseudomonas, and those two groups of organisms actually contribute to more hospitalization and more healthcare costs in the United States than Legionnaires' disease in its entirety. So this is a bigger problem in that we aren't controlling those biofilm-loving organisms that are happening across the United States, in healthcare facilities, in nursing homes, in communities. And until we do, those costs and illnesses are going to continue to rise.
Now, David, we don't, you know, we've been talking a lot about Legionella, and obviously you've brought in brilliantly into other pathogens that are there in our water that are actually more problematical. But and I have to be honest, I haven't heard a great deal about it. We hear about Legionella in the news. Why do you think we're not taking the NTM seriously? Why are we not taking the other pathogens just as serious, if not more, than Legionella when they cause more problems?
You could say it is by luck, chance, or forethought. But in 1977, when Legionnaire's disease was first discovered, recognized, the initial concerns were, you know, were fantastical. They weren't sure if it was bioterrorism, and they weren't sure if it was radiation. They weren't, you know, there's so many theories that were going around when they were trying to figure out what it was, that it was deemed and legislated to be a nationally notifiable disease, so that any individual who's diagnosed with this disease, whether it's their physician or the laboratory that diagnoses them, it has to be reported by state law to the county health department, which then aggregates that data, sends it to the state, and they send it to the CDC. And that's the only reason we have visibility on this. NTMs and Pseudomonas grow in the same conditions, can cause same, almost exact same types of disease, sometimes even more difficult to treat. They don't cause as many fatalities as Legionnaires, right, but they certainly cause, you know, illness and morbidity in people all across the country. Those are not nationally notifiable disease. Those are not required to be reported. And under health privacy laws, it is literally an act of Congress to get that data and information out of individual physicians and medical records. So we have, I'll say, a very obscured, opaque ability to understand that. But where they have been examined or looked at in small-scale studies and looking at the costs associated with those other two groups of organisms, they are as bad, if not worse, than Legionnaire's disease in their impacts on humans in the United States. So I really believe that those other types of diseases should be added to the list of notifiable diseases so that we understand what's going on and we can look at this in a holistic or comprehensive manner,
yeah,
and aren't just playing whack-a-mole with whatever the latest bug is.
How do you think we can change the perception and possibly even change Congress's mind or organizations? How can we move forward to make that a reality rather than it just being a pipe dream, to actually make these other organisms reportable?
Well, I think that's going to be a tough, that's going to be a tough call, because it will cost money. It will cost a lot of money. Unfortunately, I believe that we are headed towards a sentinel event that will bring Legionella and other waterborne pathogens to the spotlight, with the infrastructure bill, where we the federal government is proposing and planning and committing dollars to change out lead service lines and improve water municipal drinking water systems across the country. And that's going to be a 10-year event and project and will take, wow, a long time. Where we've seen this happen on a smaller scale, we see the water quality just become horrendous and pathogens become released from the construction activities and they be shed downstream into neighboring facilities, hospitals, nursing homes, apartments, decorative fountains. And then those materials then result in outbreaks of disease. And so I fear that what is likely to happen if we don't, you know, take that into consideration is that the well-intended efforts to do lead line service line replacements is going to result in the unintended consequence of outbreaks of disease. And that may bring it to the forefront. But I'm sorry to say, but the efforts to have water management programs and be proactive in building water systems is it's been driven by a voluntary standard that was published in 2015 called ASHRAE 188. And it, since that was published, its adoption has been slow and arduous. How well it's being adopted, I think, is debatable. But essentially, since then, Legionnaires' disease rates have either increased or stayed the same from year to year. There's been a bigger increase from COVID shutdowns on Legionnaires' disease than by proactive water management plans. So one is just, I think, getting back to your question, what is it going to take? It's going to take recognition recognition of the importance, and maybe even, unfortunately, impacting them specifically. I've been fortunate to be part of a handful of emerging issues in the United States, and dealt with, you know, politicians and policymakers and different states. Yeah. And the major issue we see is that, you know, when something new crops up and people are afraid and there's a lack of knowledge and understanding about it, the policymakers, the legislators, they pay attention. And until something changes their focus and often brings it to their doorstep, you know, their mother, their father, their uncle, their child is impacted. Their home, their constituents, until they are impacted, it doesn't hold great importance. So, that something of that nature is most likely to be necessary to make substantive change.
Now, David, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're jumping into this, making me think about the issues that we had in New Orleans. There's a potential massive threat in that state, and especially in New Orleans. And I think it's been intimated, you know, we've spoken about this before, where if they're upgrading the water supply from the issues that happened there, the threat is increased because of the old systems. Let's talk a little bit. Am I right in that?
Can I interrupt just? Well, can I interrupt a second here?
Oh, you,
yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely.
I'm having my whole camera is crapped out. I don't. Can you see me at all? Like,
no.
I'm not. It's just showing here blank. I don't know. I'm just having communication issues.
Well, we can hear you just fine. Let's just keep it at that, and we can put an image up on you afterwards. Yeah. I think that would be, we couldn't tell you were still there. So if you're still able to hear us and do the audio, then we'll listen to your lovely voice.
If this is a beta anyway, I think, you know, we have a pretty good idea that this can work. I think it's going well, right? So why don't we just do this when I come down? Because if the image quality isn't good and the whole bit, you know, why don't we just do it first class? You know what I mean? So it's going to be nice.
Let's go ahead and finish this one out in the next 15. And it's going to be audio first anyway, Brian. It's going to be audio.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We've got enough for a really good episode. Yeah, let's go for another 15. We've got enough for a really good episode. We'll round it out. And then we can arrange something else, and at least we've got something to play with, because this has been really good, and we're not...
Yeah, no, it's good, but I thought this was like a beta, right?
Yeah, but it's too good for a beta. We've got enough to use here. This has gone really well, apart from the technology, but we can edit that out. That's no problem.
Okay. Yeah, let's just stick with the audio, okay?
Yeah, let's go for it. I think it's gone well, so let's kill it. Let's bring in, let me just segue that there. So David, am I right in my suggestions? And let's bring Brian into that discussion, because I do believe that there was an issue, especially in New Orleans. So, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but that is a big case.
Well, there outbreaks in New Orleans are actually fairly rare. I'm not aware of any. And New Orleans is a bit of a conundrum. They get and have to treat their water extensively because their water source is the Mississippi River. They had a major issue because of saltwater intrusion, which would have destroyed their water systems. But the type of chemistry that they've been using for years seems to be uniquely effective at preventing Legionella from growing both in their water systems, in their municipal water systems, and their city and their building water systems and cooling towers. So New Orleans is not the it has definitely have their major issues. And if the saltwater intrusion had gone just a few more miles north and influenced and impacted their water intakes, they would have been looking at billions of dollars worth of corrosion and damage to their water treatment plants and to equipment used throughout the city. Some of the worst Legionnaires' disease issues in the country are in New York State and New York City specifically, as
Yeah,
well
I
as
believe that.
Baltimore. Those are some of the worst in which, long-standing failures in water treatment, their inability to comply with consent orders by the US EPA, storing their water, finished water in open reservoirs, has resulted in, numerous outbreaks, ongoing outbreaks. And like I said, New York City is literally a hotbed of this issue. Brian?
Yeah, Brian, what's your thoughts on this?
Can you hear me?
Brian, do you have some feedback on New York City and treatment issues and aging infrastructure?
I think that, there's a perception, that the, I don't know if I should get into this here.
This will be another discussion.
But let me put it this way. Water comes in the building and it seeds the building. And so you have to focus on, the buildings, once the to prevent the amplification. But I think there needs to be also more emphasis on the water coming in from the municipality. I don't think enough effort, has been focused on looking, very thoroughly, at water coming in, in municipalities. And I think that's when you say infrastructure, that's one thing that comes to mind.
Well, Brian, on that, I know that the U.S. EPA under the Safe Drinking Water Act has had Legionella pneumophila on the contaminants under consideration list. The CCL, I think they've had it on there since the CCL3, but for the last 15 years, they have been considering because they know Legionella pneumophila is in municipal water systems, and they don't regulate everything in water. It's not pure, sterile, contaminant-free liquid that comes through the tap. But they do regulate certain things, and they've been considering putting Legionella pneumophila on that for years, and they don't. So most people don't recognize or realize that just because they say the water has been tested and we think it's safe, that means it hasn't been tested by municipal water systems for Legionella. That is a rare thing unless they are accused or pushed to do that. And the water systems they have, there are goals, good intentions to control Legionella, but they don't intentionally or are required to control or prevent Legionella from being in that water. And so they are blind to it. And when we do outbreak or routine monitoring for Legionella in building water systems, we always test the incoming water. And the frequency and the concentrations that we find it in would shock most people. And honestly, most municipal water suppliers are simply tone deaf to that discussion. And frankly, even in New York, the engineers and the city public health department are also tone deaf. They will literally tell you that that is not from the water. The water is wholesome and pure, and it got into your building's water system some other way. And so it is a.
I have a similar experience. I was giving a talk in England, and there was also a person from the government, a prosecutor, giving a talk, you know, in the same session. And he was basically saying that, you know, if there's an outbreak, they can actually charge individually, you know, the person responsible. And they could get, you know, court fines and even jail sentences. And I asked him privately afterwards, I said, you know, well, what happens, you know, if the water came in and was contaminated from the municipality? How do you factor that in, you know, if there's then an outbreak in a building? And he said, no, it doesn't happen. The water from the municipality is wholesome. And then I was like, where do we start, you know?
Well, it can be very wholesome if you don't test for it.
That's true, if you don't know it. So, gentlemen, we're coming up to time. I want to give you both a final, talk, you know, final something to say. But let me just throw this out to both of you. So, with everything that's happening, with all of the pathogens that's in water, obviously it's quite clear that what they're saying is not healthy water or it's not pure water. So what is microbiologically safe water? What should we know? What is microbiologically safe water? Tell us.
Well, you know, I don't like to use the word safe because, you know, it's kind of a moving target. You know, what's safe for you may be not safe for me or vice versa. But basically, you know, you want to have water that's not growing and amplifying pathogenic organisms, you know, especially unknowingly, where it's happening and you don't realize it's happening. So if you can minimize the growth of organisms, let's say, for example, you can minimize Legionella to one organism per liter, right? Now, you can't say that's safe because someone could really, on a remote chance, breathe, you know, an organism in. They would have to be highly immunocompromised and likely be, if they're exposed to one organism, then that organism, you know, would have to cause their illness, you know, with a very low dose. So they would have to be highly immunocompromised. So it would have to be a rare event. But if you think about, you know, one organism per liter and you're inhaling it, you know, now we're not talking about organisms where you get it from drinking, but organisms like Legionella where you get it from inhalation, you would have to, on average, inhale 1 liter to be exposed to one organism on average, you know, if there's an outbreak. So people would drown before they got Legionnaire's disease. So, you know, you can't really say it's safe, but you can say it's a negligible risk, right? And that's what we're going for, is negligible risk. Okay. That's how we look at it. And that's really, our goal is to make sure that clients, buildings, et cetera, have minimal risk. Mm.
And Brian, you are spot on right there, and I do agree with you. The irony is that the Safe Drinking Water Act, right in the name of the title, Occupational Safety and Health Administration. You know, we do this to ourselves. We put safe up there, but you know, as a toxicologist, I agree. You're managing risk. You're making exposures to a level and duration that poses an insignificant or unmeasurable risk. Safe is a horrible term, but somebody actually does use that term, microbiologically safe. And those are carbon filter manufacturers. So there's a type of filter used to remove taste and odor from water. We often use it in our refrigerators. They're often used on bottle fillers and ice machines. And if you read the fine print, they will tell you, only use this filter on water that is microbiologically safe. And nobody really defines what that means. Now, right. The Safe Drinking Water Act does define safe water.
Okay.
They define it as water with without contaminants. Not a certain level of contaminants or undetectable, without contaminants. So that means literally they're saying it is H2O, for which you can't
find
it.
Which we know it's not.
Right.
Yeah.
And the biggest irony is that we add contaminants to make the water safe for pathogens. So under laws, since 1908 in New Jersey, when they first started treating drinking water systems, we've been dumping chlorine into our water systems to keep us from getting ill from fecal-borne contaminants and cholera. And you know that's the biggest irony, is that we add a toxin, we add a contaminant to make the water safe, rather than removing the contaminants altogether. So it's a muddled mess in definitions, and you know we've got to find better ways to manage this water. Adding more chemicals in today's environment is not a sustainable solution. Adding more chlorine, monochlorine, chlorine dioxide, they're great for when you need them. But when you do this every day and the level of contaminants continue to increase, we keep adding more and more or finding more and more contaminants such as PFAS in the quote forever chemical, you know, there's a point at which we need to make water clean, not keep adding chemicals to hopefully fix the last water. So, you know, microbiologically safe, the functional reason, meaning to me, is that which does not cause disease. Excellent. Beyond that, it is a very nebulous definition.
David, Brian, thank you so much for this conversation today. I'm sure it's going to cause a lot more questions than it is anything else. And this is just the start. I mean, we will be back. We're going to be going deeper into this, ladies and gentlemen. Brian will be back from PathCon Labs, and Dr. David Krause will be joining us again, where we'll be diving into more of this this topic. And so if you've got any questions, or if you've got any concerns, or you want to ask these gentlemen anything about the work that they do, then please connect with us. You'll get details down below, wherever you can see it. So let's have a final word from you guys about our safe drinking water, and then we will wrap it up. David, you carry us off, and then Brian.
Well, again, thank you everyone for joining us today. I think knowledge is power. The more you know, the better you can take care of yourself and your family, your workers, and your community. Water quality is precious. Without quality water, buildings, cities, schools close down. And you know, we need to rebuild the structures that we have, but we need to take into consideration all of the unintended consequences that are likely to happen. And waterborne pathogens are leading the way in that issue.
David, just let everybody know how they can get in touch with you, your website details, etc.
Absolutely. You can reach us at www.hc3fl.com, and we have a link there to be able to ask questions or contact us directly.
Perfect. Thank you. Brian, over to you, my friend.
Okay. I got to make this good. Closing remarks here. So I would say that I would probably try to put emphasis on the importance of this bacteria called, you know, Legionella. You know, there's not many hazards that exist in 2024. You know, that could kill people, that could cause, you know, hospitalizations, intensive care, you know, stays, organ failures, shut buildings down, even some cases, maybe even putting a company out of business. I mean, what organisms are there still today that can, you know, cause that much hazard, you know, and it's still such a low priority for some people. Some people don't even think about it, you know, until it's too late. And so I would say, if you're in a position of responsibility for maintaining, you know, health and safety in a facility, you know, this has to be given, you know, higher priority in 2024. So that would be my closing remarks as to what I think, you know, is needed. It's a higher priority in both in public health and in, you know, office buildings and, you know, other buildings, you know, where you have building occupants at risk. Hotels,
perfect,
hospitals.
Brian. How can people get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me. My company's PathCon Laboratories. We're in Peachtree Corners, Georgia. My email is bshelton@pathcon.com. That's B-S-H-E-L-T-O-N at PathCon, P-A-T-H-C-O-N.com. And any kind of microbiological issue in buildings, you know, we're happy to help.
Gentlemen,
thank you so much for having me today.
This, absolutely, Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been great to dive into this. And ladies and gentlemen, you're listening. It makes you think, what exactly are you consuming in your water? What is in our water? I know for me that I don't look at it the same way when I'm in the shower or if I'm standing by a water feature. It's always in my mind, how safe is this? And I would urge everyone to have that concept in their mind, whether you're on holiday in a hotel, in a leisure place, just be aware that there are pathogens out there that can cause us things. I'm looking forward to the next discussion that we will be bringing you very soon. So from myself, from Dr. David Krause, from Brian Shelton from PathCon Labs, it is goodbye, and we look forward to seeing you and sharing with you once again. God bless.